The following program may contain content that your kids would love to hear, but you may not want them to.
This is John Philip Sousa. I love a good parade, and I love listening to Cotolo Chronicles.
All right, I apologize. I'm really, really sorry. I apologize unreservedly. I offer a complete and utter retraction. The imputation was totally without basis in fact and was in no way fair comment and was motivated purely by malice. And I deeply regret any distress that my comments may have caused you or your family. And I hereby undertake not to repeat any such slander at any time in the future.
The Frank is on. The Frank is on. The Frank is on.
And if you missed that,
the Frank is on. The Frank is on.
You're kidding. The donut lady has other stuff too. The donut lady has napkins.
I'm scared as hell.
And now, on with the show.
Now?
From
New York. Was written by Fred Amp and John Cantor.
Shut up! I'm talking now, Frank. Let's sing this together, you and me.
Don Costa. And stolen.
He's dead too. Move on.
Start spreading the news.
This is dedicated to my hometown.
I am leaving today.
But not quick enough.
I want to be a part.
Okay, I can make sure I
New York.
Oh, he's gonna improvise.
Yes, he's the
Vagabond Blues.
They are longing to stray.
You got a live version here, and he's got this thing in his voice.
Right now. The very heart of it.
I got less.
New York. I want to wake up in a city that never sleeps.
Everybody, you know the words.
They are melting away. I'm gonna make a brand new start of it in old New York. And if I can make it there, I'll make it anywhere. It's up to you.
Control over there, you know what I mean?
All over the place, this guy.
Mm-hmm.
godfather of internet broadcasting. Actually, radio, whatever you want. Bard of broadcasting, the third man, it's me! Someone once said, if you were two people, you'd be the high and the mighty. So welcome to the high and the mighty, the third man, the vegetable man, the most fascinating man on the internet. There's no doubt about that. Maybe there is. I'm Frank Catola, old man whose name adorns the title of the show. We're going to chronicle tonight with some big, wonderful people who do things a lot and talented people. It's going to be great. Don't go away. Don't go away from here. Or if you go away, bring your device, whatever it is you listen to on. Thank you very much. From Ice Cap to Ice Cap, from Hamlet to City, from Othello and into every bordello. Because that's where they really like to hear it. I don't actually know that, but when that was written many, many, many years ago, we just went with that. Because we imagine that if there were, there are bordellos. I mean, don't get me wrong. Don't get me right. Don't even get me confused with anyone else. I am not a difficult historian. I'm talking to you, Dr. You Know Who You Are, Dr. Footenstein. It's me, Frank Atoll, a man's name adorns the title of the show. I am here, and I was not here unexpectedly. We made a program change on the show before this, but that's okay. I told you, anything can happen in this digital world, and that's what's going to happen on this show, whether you're listening alive or lifelike on another station or on the station live on a Thursday night. I'm really happy all the time when Charles Dennis shows up. And he brings the most fascinating people, not that he is fascinating in and of himself, when he and I get together to talk and converse. Charles has with him, or around the area there, from some more Charles product. You know, I thought Charles Dennis product, Food Dog product, I thought that I was prolific. And I'm not saying that to pat myself on the back, because really a lot of the stuff I do is, you know, prolific and not all great. And some people would say none of it's great, but that's another story. What I'm trying to say is my body of work. I love that term. I love that term when they say his body of work. I love that because it really brings the work into the living lexicon, the world of the living. My body of work is large, and over the years, it should be if I was going to do anything that was work at anything. Okay, but here's the point. The point is every time I turn around, Charles Dennis has something else going on. Gotta love this guy. He's been working since he's 8. And for all we know, he's lying about that. And he's been working since he's 2. I don't know. He'll be here at 9:30. And then we'll be talking about a wonderful short that I saw last night. And I'm going to really talk about this with him. I'm going to get into his brain about this. And with the two actors who star in Shortly to Go, which I don't know when it's going to be released. I had a special pass to see it, and I'm not giving it to you people. I'm going to tell you that on Food Dog Productions, which you get on YouTube, and on, I think he has a page too. I don't know. Yeah, I get confused now with people who have the YouTube and the page there, I mean, even though I have them. It's just all so unbelievably complex. No, it's not complex. Yes, it is. It's, what is it? It's rocket science, which is why you should read rocket science at fourculture.com and listen to me and the gang at Forethought on Tuesday nights on YouTube Live. Okay. And there's some more promo crap. Charles Dennis, we were just on recently talking about At Will at Large, another chapter of this ongoing, series. And then what happens? I get another, it's not that long ago, and another email from Charles says, hey, Shortly to Go is out now with Colin Fox and Kenneth Welch. And I went, what? Those Musketeers are in your, and then I get to see it. I'll explain that later. I get to see it. And it was so much better than keeping anything on the cable television, because I don't know, I'm beginning to think maybe I'm going to reduce that down to nothing and just do everything online. I think that's why it's getting so expensive for people who are still doing it. You don't need all this stuff. Same crap over and over again, whether it's news or it's a product. I mean, you know what they do is, and I don't really mind the fact that there's so much product now because there's so many stations and so many different venues and genres of television that are shown on these stations. But for God's sakes, for goodness sakes, for sake's sakes, do we have to see some of this stuff that really should be buried forever? Really, I don't know. Is that just me? Aye, 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 what a summer. And how about that New York? Every time I play that as an opening. But anyway, Charles is here. I went back and forth there. I'm like a tennis ball. I am, and it's not difficult history. It's easy history, and I know it, and I'll say it. You hear that, Dr. Futtenstein? You know what I'm talking about, Dr. Futtenstein. You know what I'm talking about. He don't listen. What does he know? He don't listen. He don't care. See? The world is filled with uncaring people, and they shouldn't. Why should he care? I don't care. I don't care about him. He don't care about me. And I don't know why he's come up this, because he's the one who taught me difficult historian. See, even for people you don't like, you don't care about, you can learn things. That's why I keep my ears open, keep my eyes and ears open. Thank goodness I can hear. Thank goodness I could see. Thank goodness I could smell. Although right now what's coming through the window in my studio is not exactly perfume. My name is Frank Cotolo. The man whose name adorns the title of the show. So Charles Dennis turned around and he's got another short, something else going on from Food Dog. I don't want to say it's a factory, because a factory kind of insinuates that something is just being mass produced and it's all the same. It's not. The Food Dog production place is not a factory. The different stuff all the time. So I'm watching these veteran actors, these great guys who you're going to talk to, well, you're going to listen to as we talk to them here on this show here, Cotolo Chronicles, with my name that is the title of the show because I chronicle. Kenneth Welsh and Colin Fox are going to be here. We hope all the Skype works out fine and we get it together and it's going to be terrific. But Charles, I don't know where he gets the time or anything else, but it's always, here's the indication that there's really good stuff going on when Charles produces, writes, and directs. And that is that he always has quality talent. You know, if I directed, put together something like he does, even a half hour short or anything I wanted to do, right, I would not be able to get the talent to do it. No matter how well I wrote it, no matter how well I directed it, people wouldn't be going, oh, can I be in your thing? Your thing. Is it a thing? It's a thing. Can I be in your thing? No. They wouldn't say, no, Frank, look, we know. We'll sit down and read your stuff. We like your prose and poetry, and that's the end of it, all right? So get out of here. We don't want to act with you. So, and I've done some of that stuff too, but you know. But Charles, he gets these, you know, there's always someone, and they're all working people, and these are men and women and children that he gets to work in these shorts and series that he does. Is it goes to show you the quality and the interest of the actors. And that's what it's worth. It's valuable is what I'm going to say. I don't want to make a question out of it. That's what, because I'm going to wind up with a sentence that ends in is or arm and am. And I don't want to do that. I don't want to do that in writing. And I don't want to do that in talking about this show or on this show. We're talking about the show, on the show, off the show. I don't even off the show. I don't do it. I try not to do it on the phone if I'm talking to anyone except those crazy telemarketers that keep calling. Because there's that whole new scheme, you know, they find a way to get your number and then get it displayed as if they're calling from your area. And then it's a bot. You know how to find a bot if something, these automatic calls, talk over them. Don't wait. Don't be polite. If you be polite, they'll give you room to talk and that'll just launch another one of their monologue. So don't do that, because you're not talking to anything but a machine. If you want to talk to a machine, make sure you buy it, you have it, and you program it so that it does what you want to do. It says what you want to say. Ah, I was, so as I said, I played the particular opening that was from a while back, when our good friend Rick was still alive and on that show there with him and at the station there, the superstation that they used to have over there, and with Chris and him and stuff, and the donut lady, of course. I love them all, but I don't know where they went and what they do, but I don't know. I gotta get in touch with them. But, every time I play that, and I think about it because I was in a New York area. I was in the New York area, which is right across the river in New Jersey last week. One of the reasons this show, was preempted and went, and we were covered by another show, but, what I really like about these trips, which I make and hope to continue to make once a year, to New Jersey, in this area of New Jersey, which is involved in all the urban areas, Secaucus and Rutherford and East Rutherford, West Rutherford, I don't know if there's a West Rutherford, Clinton and Secaucus, did I say Secaucus? Whatever, Newark, all the Kearney, Springfield, I don't know, now I'm just making up words and names, but I love a certain time of day because where I'm working is on a roof. Okay. I'm broadcasting on a roof and I could see the skyline of New York. And that, reminded me of when we opened up that show and on that time and played and had a lot of fun on there. And it makes me think of Rick, who I never want to forget because he was a lovely guy, a great and loyal radio guy. And, we miss him immensely. And I was, I'm proud to have said, to say and have said that I said goodbye to him, in an area where I thought he helped me, heard me. But anyway, and every time I play that song anymore, and I've got a story about, one of these days I'll tell you my Las Vegas story about New York, New York. I must have said it before and I'll say it again because someone said, you said it, Frank, say it again. And that's this, from the roof where I'm located and broadcasting, I look out, and when it's sunset, it's okay just to see the great skyline of that fabulous Manhattan, which is you know, from afar is more fabulous. Believe me. Well, no, don't believe me. I'm just talking about how I feel about it. Okay, and because I hate that city, I hate those boroughs, I hate that place, and I grew up there. Okay, here's what I'm saying, is that it's just beautiful from a roof far away to see as the sun sets and all that, and the pollution is crystallized, and it's like a kaleidoscope of colors. Even the dirt looks good in the air from that far away, and you could see all the Empire State Building. Okay, and the Freedom Tower, which now, of course, replaces the Twin Towers, and to look, it's beautiful for everyone. It's beautiful for people who've never been there. It's beautiful for people who have been there, who've grown up there and not grown up there, but it's nothing like seeing it live, because I do have a lot of good memories about Manhattan and all the areas around it. I'm not all bad memories, okay? But to see it from afar and know that's like the Mecca. Not that I want to go back to it, but of course that's where where I originated. So isn't that great to be able to see it from afar, look at it that way and just look over the landscape. What an incredible conglomeration of buildings and life and breathing and everything and death and healing and everything. It's because, you know, life goes on in a city, in a parade of human movement, not just like in a little town, of course, but because it's so much, it's so thick, it's so voluminous. There's so much depth. And to look at it and see that landscape from afar and know it's real, not like you see it in a movie where it's presented to you, as they want to present it to you, but to see the colors as it goes into nighttime and the lights come on at the Empire State Building and the Freedom Tower and all this stuff happens. And, even if you're just looking at it as, you know, these structures, and you know that a lot's going on, but I mean, I know stuff that's going on, and I've been in some of those buildings, and I've been on those streets, and I've, so it's wonderful to see. So I love to stand out there on that roof, regardless of when I'm working. Sometimes, well, and I can too, because, you know, it gets dark so late now. And when I'm out there, and it's usually, it's always the first weekend in August, and sometimes at the end of the year, but it gets darker earlier then. And I'm not going this year. I'm staying right here with you and everything. But it's beautiful. And so to play New York, New York, and hear me screaming like that, as I did with Rick and Chris, in that, it's good. It's good. It's fun. And I will continue to, share my fun, my thoughts, my pain. I know you know, it's not just I know your pain. It's not just I know your pain. I know your pleasure too. And if you listen to the show and continue to listen to the show, then I know you're with me and you know that we are exclusively broadcasting, as we always have since the beginning of time. Now, the beginning of time, when I say that, I mean the beginning of time with internet broadcasting. So, and I want to say something about this. Adam, what's his name? Adam Carolla? Carolla? Is that his name? Adam Carolla? The old, right? Okay. He's got a school. You pay him and he tells you how to do podcasts and produce them and stuff. Well, let me tell you something. Okay. You can do it yourself. I don't care. Let him make money. I don't care what it is, but I just like, you know, like he's the king and he's introduced as the king. The second guy who's been introduced as the king of podcasting, now has these two originators, Mark Maron and him, Adam Carolla. It's like, that's bull, asterisk, 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 asterisk. And you know, I don't say the words and I don't curse the words because I can say them. I don't say them just because I can. I don't say them. Okay. But, so these guys are supposedly the kings of podcasts and broadcasting. Baloney. You find out. You have the equipment right now in your machine. Just go ahead and do it. Don't listen to anybody because you know why? You don't have a name and you're not going to get, make money off of it. So you could do it if you want to. Everybody's been doing it. And then of course, who continues to do it? No one. No one does continue to do it. When podcasting started, we were already on the air and podcasts became the rage. And there were websites that listed podcasts, listed their audience and their activity. You know, in terms of it was like a top 100. So the most listened to got on the top. Yeah, you know, where are they all now? They're gone. They're gone. But I'm here. And my name is Frank Atola. I'm the man whose name adorns the title of the show. Go get my books at Amazon.com, Lulu.com, and Blurb.com. Do you realize that? I just skipped a beat because I forgot. I was going to say Blair. What is that? And great announcements coming up about much more going on in the Cotola world, which you're going to love. I know it. And if you don't, then you don't. So what are you supposed to do about that? Also, the stuff you can read for free. Yes, the books cost money, kids. But, you know, it's very cheap. I told you, $25, you get a whole bunch. Just go from one site to another. But here, get them in digital, of course. You want, it's going to cost more if you want them to print because that's the way the world has changed. I told you about 4Culture. You go to 148.ca/Frank and there's every week another blog, short and sweet, funny, and I don't know. You know, people say educational about certain things, so they add educational to the contents of features about, you know, whatever it is they do, writing or a podcast or broadcasting. And you don't know that because some people learn nothing from anything. That's why I tell you that even stuff you don't like, you could listen or watch or feel or whatever it is and you could learn something. So, stay with it. Okay. Whatever goes on. So anyway, you could go there and we got stuff on there. We got the 4Culture Rocket Science comes out every, I think the last week of every month on 4Culture.com where I used to put those extremely, okay, forget about that. Doesn't matter what I did. And where else? Where else? There's other places, too. I know it. Oh, yes, of course. The Montreal Jewish News, although that does not happen every week. Funny political stuff, a political pulp over there. And, of course, that's connected to True Talk Radio, where we are on twice a day. I believe we're still on twice a day, 5 days a week with this show. Not live, but lifelike, which means we play this and you hear it. And there's other places. You go to CotoloChronicles.blogspot.com, find out the other stations we're on, and if they're dead links or whatever, sorry. Then just go to Google and type in Cotolo Chronicles. Or go to Yahoo and type in. Or go to, what are the other ones? Bing, and Ask Me. There's a whole bunch of search engines. Sometimes it's good to test the same object or issue or topic, I don't know what you want to call it, a different search engines, because they pick up different things here and there. Yes, that's true. Don't get married to one search engine. If you learn anything today, it's don't get married to one search engine. And don't let anybody, any of these websites, don't let them be your homepage just because, would you like us to be your homepage? No, no. Pick your own homepage. Figure out how to do it on your browser and keep it, right? Don't let them, you want us to be your home? And when you download something, lots of times they go, would you like to have the toolbar? If I took every toolbar that they said I should have, my screen would be like like spaghetti thin on the bottom. There'd be no screen, because it would just be filled with toolbars. You don't need all those toolbars, so don't do that. I know I'm telling you as if this is something you should or shouldn't do. You can do whatever the hell you want. That's not the point. The point is, don't let them tell you. And this is the internet. So don't let anybody to tell you. And you want to start a podcast, try it. Make mistakes. Do crap. And then let it out there and then see what happens. Don't pay anyone to do it. And I don't care if it's Adam Carolla or it's St. Peter. If there is a St. Peter. I know there's an Alan Carolla, but I know there's not a St. Alan. Adam, I said the wrong name anyway. Coming up, of course, we're going to start with Mr. Charles Dennis. And then we're going to move on and try to get connected to the other guys, Colin Fox and Kenneth Welsh. And there's a lot, you're going to know these guys. And later on, of course, what else can you do? Yes, you could listen on the stations, as I said. That you find out, listen to this later, you can go and get it at juicedtalk.com, where you can get those archived shows. And they're going way back now. And then you can write to me at fcotolo@yahoo.com and tell me what you like and don't like and why you should care, why I should care. Because you should be expressive. Tell me anything you want. That's the kind of person I am. I'm just like that. We're going to go to Charles Dennis and see if he's there right now. You hear it? Calling Charles Dennis. Mr. Charles.
My man, where is he?
Mr. Charles Dennis.
Yes, I want to see you, Frank.
You're not going to be able to see me, Charles, because I have a glitch with my cam.
So that's fine. That's fine. And Ulrika didn't bother to get her hair done for you anyhow.
Well, you know, I'd be the only one that anyone would see because this is not television, remember.
No.
Okay, but it's good to see you, and you look fine, and I like you in yellow. You had a yellow shirt on.
You can see me.
Huh?
You can see me.
Yes, I can, and I'm glad I can, because...
Well, is hiding on the other side of the screen.
Hi, Frank.
Hi, how are you? Why is she hiding? I'm the only one who can... Don't worry, no one else is watching.
Yeah, but are you wearing what you wore last time there in your...
No,
making a... Wine in the basement there, you had.
No. I have a regular red t-shirt on for anybody who cares. It gets very warm down here in my area. Hey, how are you? I was talking about you before I called. And, I'm going to tell you first, did you get my message? I got Colin. I still don't have Kenneth.
They're sending you just one lengthy word or something, and that wasn't the way it worked, so.
Okay, is Kenneth gonna be with Colin?
No. Colin lives in a, did you see the film yet? Did you watch the film?
I sure as heck did.
Little town is where Colin Fox lives.
Oh, okay.
And the beautiful house is his house.
Good. Because it would have cost a bundle for the budget if you had to build that damn thing.
Tell me about it.
And
Kenny lives about 2 hours away in the hamlet of Sanford, Ontario.
Sanford, Ontario. I remember it well. I have no idea where Sanford is. Listen, what about Kenneth? Is he gonna, he's not gonna be with him? How are we gonna get him?
Well, I, I just wrote to him because he's down in New York. He's driving back from somewhere. He's the original rebel without a cause. You know, yeah. if there's a reason to dig your heels in or not, he'll find it. Well, so
we'll have a spirited conversation no matter what. But if he gets on here, we do.
I said to him, if for any reason Frank cannot contact you at 10, just go on Skype to Frank Cotolo.
That's right. You know, yeah. Well, how could it be any easier than that? I was telling everybody because I did see the movie, the short, last night, and I'm telling everybody here. I'm saying, you know, I thought that I was prolific, but you just go. There's two things about you. Number one, there's always something else. I didn't, you know, with At Will going on and us talking about that, I didn't expect to hear from you for a while, or at least until there was another episode. And then here you come on and say, hey, what about this? And I'm going, what about it?
Well, you know, that's why At was late this month. Sounds like a teenage girl. no, there goes Ulrika, dying of embarrassment again.
Bring her back. Eureka. Eureka.
Eureka, Ulrika. Yes,
Eureka, Ulrika.
Here's the deal, Frank. I was supposed to shoot that film in December, and I flew up there, and then I got violently ill, and we weren't able to shoot.
What happened? What happened? You okay?
Yeah, it was just, I think it was the it's called the airplane, you know, it's called the, first of all, it's December back east. You know what happens to people.
Lots of them, yeah.
And by about the third day that I was up there in Ontario, I just got the shakes and I went to sleep. I was staying at Kenny's place in Sanford and I slept for about 14 hours. And when I woke up, I said, I can't do this.
Wow.
So Colin said, well, come back, you know, come back in the spring and we'll do it. And I said, well, why can't we shoot at your place, which I'd never been to. Mm-hmm. And so that was the plan. So I went in July. I went up there on the 5th of July and we shot that end of it there over 4 days. And then I came back here and shot the Patty McCormick end of the phone call.
Right.
And what about Patty McCormick? Isn't that a far cry from Judge Joni?
The other thing I was saying, yes, and that's what I was saying, is the other thing is that Charles has, this is what I always tell my audience, because you weren't listening. Charles, I said, whatever he does, he gets this fine talent. Like, people are available. These wonderful people are available to work with you. So it really is, it's testament to you that they want to do this, because these are all people who work. As every time I look at what their histories, they're always working and doing, but they stop what they're doing to get Charles. And I said, you know, if I decided to, you know, do a film or a video or something like that, nobody cares about working with me. It's like they go like, look, we'll read your stuff and I just get out of here. You know, nobody wants to. It's amazing. Because I know you have a history of in the business too and everything, but that still doesn't mean lots of people have history in the business. They can't get anybody to just come over and so the material, the directing, everything. So those are the two things I told everyone if they don't know already. Now here's what I want you to tell me. I saw that and I told everyone I had a special pass to see Shortly to Go. I want you to say when, because we're going to talk about this, but we're not going to give anything away or what have you. But I want everyone to know when they're going to be able to see Shortly to Go with these two great actors.
Well, we're exploring the festival circuit at the moment. My dream for this, and why not dream big, I would love to see it accepted for the Oscars, you know, for the live action short. And in the old days, you had to, remember when you used to go to the movies and they had shorts?
Yeah.
Your movie had to run for 1 week in Los Angeles at a theater in order to qualify. But now with all these festivals, if your film is shown at a reputable festival during the year, then that is sufficient qualification. But I mean, who knows how many hundreds of films go in.
Right.
But I think that the nature of this and the story and the fact that the membership of the Academy is still over 65, I think that it has a poignancy. And certainly for people who are used to my wacky comedies, this is not anything that they're expecting at all.
No, it's whackless, in fact. And I didn't know what to expect. And I love that, because not because it, when people, act in a, and something is written well, and when people act as well as those guys act in that, there's no way you can like turn this off. It just like it's taking you along and you want to know exactly what's happening. You give away, I'm just talking as a writer now too here. I mean, you give away just enough, in each scene, to keep it moving and make everyone, want to stay to the end. And I think that what's great about that to me is also if someone, can dislike it, but they have to see the whole thing in order to dislike it because you bring them all the way to the end. Nobody's walking away from this stuff. So,
but the other thing is, I was talking to Ross Benjamin yesterday.
Uh-huh.
You know, who's part of the rep company and has been. And Ross is now in his early 40s and has been working with me since he was 15.
Yes,
and there's a testament to our friendship and everything else. And I said, "Did you see the film?" He said, "Oh my God!" And he said, "Didn't I call it?" And he just starts discussing themes and this and that. What's amazing is that nobody watches this film without getting into a discussion and or argument about it.
That's good, because
that's you know, very rarely does anyone ever, you know, carry on for more than 30 seconds about the stuff I shoot. So I'm very, very proud of the fact that it's provocative. It also, hopefully, Frank, is a backdoor pilot for a series Ulrika and I are hoping to do about exotic travel and Mr. Klobes. It's sort of, somebody said it's like The Millionaire, you know? You remember that old show?
Yeah. Mr. Anthony, what was his name?
Tipton,
Anthony?
It's Millionaire, Mike.
Mike Anthony, that was the guy who gave away $1 million, yeah, right?
Harvey Miller.
Boy, that's when $1 million, though, meant $1 million.
$10 million today or whatever, yeah.
But, well, you know, in terms of what you're talking about, I always believe's not the word. I guess I adhere to what William Faulkner said, when he said, you want people to love something or hate it. You don't want the people in the middle because if they just don't care about it, right? You want to evoke an emotion, you do. And they do. They're great. They are great. You know what I noticed? There's something, there was something a little different. And tell me if I'm wrong or I'm just seeing this from my, you know, from a singular point, a POV. The editing was a little different in this. Your style of editing was a little different than in At Will. Did I see something? Did I catch something? I'm not saying, not bad or good. I mean, it was good, but there was something about the style of editing with only two people in it. Am I catching anything here?
I don't know, really. I mean, the composite, I tried to keep the composition, you know, first of all, I never having been to Colin's house, and I arrived there the day of shooting, he'd sent me some pictures months earlier, and I went, oh, this is wonderful. But until you get in there, and you know, what's very touching about it is there's an art direction credit on there for Carol Fox Birmingham, and Colin's wife passed away about 3 years ago after a lengthy illness. And when we were halfway through shooting, I said, did Carol decorate this house? And he said, yes, she did. I said, then she's the art director.
Oh, okay. Good. Good for
this
you.
This is the first posthumous art directing credit. But it's just that house is such an important part of that story.
Well, I just love the way it went from, especially when it went into the kitchen and you, you shot through, the hanging stuff and when he was making the soup, you know.
I walked into that kitchen and I saw the stairs and I started up the stairs and then I saw the pots and I said, oh my God, this is great. I mean, these were gifts from the architecture of the house.
So why can't, and so if this is going to go on tour of at festivals and stuff, then we're talking about some right now.
So KCET, which is one of the local PBS stations, they have some kind of, you know, you submit short films and they show them on there. So I'm exploring all the outlets. I'm also, and I don't want to give away the story, but you know, having seen the film, there must be organizations that believe in what is going on in that film, and I may send it to them and say, perhaps you'd like to get behind this film.
That's a good idea. I guess any, you know, any way you can, especially these days when it's so much easier to find the avenues of, you know, of experimenting who you're going to send what to these days.
Yeah.
You know, but that's a good idea. So then, everyone else is right now is going to be, we're going to lead them over to, what's there already at Food Dog. And then we're going to talk about these other projects, right?
Yeah.
Because of course you got a list of things. So it's not like you're taking a rest there for a couple of days. Do you do any projects at the same time?
Yes. Yeah. So we've got Ulrika and I just finished this new, script, Deadly Deceit.
Ah, that's one of them. Yeah.
And we're looking to set that up in Texas because Ulrika has background there. We've got several things in development on different levels. And mm-hmm. I don't know if you went on Facebook today and saw Fred Melamed singing The Lady from 29 Palms as Diego Fiesta, the gay hairdresser. It's hysterical.
No, I haven't been over to Facebook. I go there less and less.
Last year, well, you're always making nice little nods on my pictures or Ulrika's. So
well,
I guess
when I go to Facebook, I make it worth my while, and I support the people who support me, and vice versa, the things I like.
Appreciate it.
So you do got a bunch of stuff. So there's a Deadly Deceit, or did I say that correct? Did you know what you said?
Deadly Deceit, which is a terrific, terrific murder mystery thriller, courtroom thriller, and
what are the other two? Now I lost my list. There were two.
The other thing. You're not aware of this, but Ulrika's cousin is Dolph Lundgren.
Oh, really? I just saw him. Wait a second. Didn't I just see him the other day? What was I watching?
Tell me.
Huh?
What were you watching? I don't know. I wasn't with you.
Well, no, I thought it was you. It looked just like you sitting there. Yeah. I don't know who the heck it was. But anyway, go ahead. I didn't know Dolph was...
So anyhow, they share a common grandmothers or something. Uh-huh. The grandmothers were sisters or something like that. And he finally came here to our housewarming, and he was a dear, dear guy. And he's very, very, very smart. And he has an engineering degree, and he was in the military and stuff. And many years ago, when I first met Colin and Kenny at the Stratford Festival in Canada, there was a production of The Dance of Death with a wonderful man named Jean Gascon, who was a mentor of mine. And he was the head of the Théâtre du Nouveau Monde in Montreal and eventually became the artistic director of Stratford. And he did this production that he directed and starred in of Dance of Death. And on one night it was in French, and on the next night it was in English. And it blew me away. I tried to watch, and then Olivier did it the next year at the National, and it was nothing compared to Gascon. And it stayed with me forever. And through the years, I'd pick up the script, I looked at it, and I thought, wait a minute. What about a modern version of Dance of Death with to get Dolph out of these? I mean, he's getting a little old to be punching people out and doing stuff like that. And he's an intelligent
guy. He's doing a good job.
And he's done. No, we're not denigrating. But, you know, I mean, you know, the governator is still messing around and all.
With a name like Dolph Lundgren, he could punch anybody at any age as far as I'm concerned.
That's right. What's his real name?
Hans.
He's Hans Lundgren.
H-A-N-S. Yeah, Hans Lundgren.
We're not quite sure how this Dolph came to pass.
A Hans and a Dolph. A Dolph and Hans.
Was Adolf in there in his name? Or Adolphus?
No, I don't know where they wouldn't have come up. No, I don't know how they came up with Dolph, but it actually has a very nice ring to it.
Oh, no, it's worked well for him.
Yeah.
But anyway, I suddenly got this idea about the three most prominent middle-aged Swedish actors who are known to North American audiences are Stellan Skarsgård, Dolph Lundgren, and Lena Olin. Because it's basically a three-character play. But and I suddenly thought, and here's the gimmick. We shoot the film simultaneously in English and Swedish.
Simultaneously. Explain that. Yeah. What do you mean?
So like when you finish doing, when Dolph does his close-up in English, I go, cut. Okay, Dolph, do it in Swedish now. So that we have two different versions, as they used to do. I don't know if you're aware of this. Back when sound first came in out here, Greta Garbo, when she made her talking debut in Anna Christie, she also did a German version of it.
Mm.
And it was very interesting because her costumes were different because, you know, this was MGM saying, well, this is how Garbo has to dress. And she was a very well-dressed hooker. But for, but for the German version, you know, she looked like a hooker. And it was Marie Dressler who played her drunken alcoholic buddy. Well, she didn't speak German. So they got Selke Viertel, who was basically Garbo's unofficial manager and the mother of Peter Viertel, the screenwriter. And these were amazing. Also, at Universal, when they were doing Dracula in the daytime with Lugosi, at night they shot a Spanish language version on the same sets. Because no one knew anything about dubbing this. They thought it was cheaper just to bring in Boye first came over here in the early 30s to do the French versions of, you know, the movie The Big House with Wallace Beery and Chester Morris?
Sure.
Well, they did a French version at night with Boye. They would just use the same sets and shoot the film. They figured, well, France, it's not just France, it's Quebec, it's Tahiti. Sure. There are all these places in French Africa, etc. So they would do French versions of these things.
Well, I heard 60, now then they move ahead 60 years, or 60-something years, and then we find that the producers of wanted Gert Frobe to be Goldfinger. Then when they saw him, they said, you are Goldfinger. And he didn't speak three words of English, but he learned his English while he was doing it. I heard that, and I from a number of sources that he spoke completely German, but he learned to speak. And if you listen to him, you'll hear him having trouble with words.
Actually, in the movie of Goldfinger, I believe he's dubbed.
Oh, he still, really?
He couldn't do it well enough.
Oh, wow!
So asked somebody to come in and dub him.
Well, so then we're both right. That is correct, then. It did happen.
Do you remember there was an actor in the 40s called Albert Bassermann?
Mm-hmm.
Albert Bassermann was like one of the gods of German theater at the turn of the last century and had his own theater company, etc. And I guess he was either Jewish or his wife was Jewish, as in the case with Conrad Veidt.
Mm-hmm.
And they got out. And he did not speak a word of English. He was nominated for the Academy Award for Hitchcock's Foreign Correspondent.
Mm.
And he would learn his roles phonetically. And he worked here all through. You look him up, you'll see. You'll say, oh, him, yeah, he's great.
Yeah.
He went back to Germany after the war, and you know, that was it. But couldn't speak a word, learned it all phonetically, and got an Oscar nomination.
It's Charles Dennis, and of course a library of memories and information about the world of Hollywood and movies.
As that man said to me years ago, Frank, I'm a suppository of cinema.
I don't want to say Hollywood. I want to say cinema, because he goes far beyond his knowledge and goes far beyond just Hollywood. And that, of course, connotates something completely. Here on Cotola Chronicles, and that's what we're chronicling, we're going to talk soon to Colin Fox, who plays a major role. There are two major roles in shortly to go. And then now let's go back to what people can see before they can see shortly to go. Where what's going on at Food Dog? There's a new Atwill come up. You guys got to catch up. They got to catch up on Atwill. I hope you know that noticed that there's been a lot of...
The new episode 5, which is called Diego and Alana, it will go out on the 25th of this month. 25th of August, episode 5 is going out, but we're still shooting.
Uh-huh.
Shot a big chunk of it over the last couple of days. And then Mr. Atwill himself, Mr. Neil Dixon, whom you had such a good visit with a couple of months ago.
We're going to get him back, too. We got to get him back.
He comes back, and then, well, I don't want to. I'll save that secret about what's happening to it. It's very exciting for our next visit.
Do you have that? Is that done entirely, written, scripted, and you're just moving through it, or are you making changes as you're going?
No. I mean, the rest of it. No, I haven't got a stockpile of scripts at all. But I do know in my head where it's going.
Man, I always like to know that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And people
ain't giving it away, Frank.
No, it's okay. The thing is that there are so many people who listen because I talk so much about this, that, and the other thing concerning creative and pop culture stuff. It's good for people to know that sometimes I imagine they're being taught and in schools or wherever they're taking courses and stuff, as opposed to being hands-on out there. And they're being taught to do things certain ways. And, of course, the creative person and a productive person does not, you know, usually finds their own voice and their own method of doing things. And so it's not how it's taught. And it's good for these people to know that stuff is getting done, you know, without the academic outline or the academic, script or, because it's a creative product process no matter what. And people do work differently. That's why I'm explaining that to you, Charles Dennis. That's why I ask.
Two things I want to say. I could not have done Shortly to Go without having done 2 years of Atwill and just getting, you know, better and better at doing stuff with the iPad.
The other thing we got to tell people who maybe are listening here and not acquainted with the times we've talked before, and that is that this stuff is being done on an iPad, Apple, right?
Apple iPad.
So when you see it, it's not like it's a big bulky or a thing on a tripod. Okay, you can put it on a tripod. Of course you can, because you could put a phone on a tripod. You put anything on a tripod. But it's being done entirely and edited correctly with software and everything, right?
The editing is done on an iMac, not on the iPad itself, although it could be done, but it just, I don't think it would be very useful.
What is the, just for people who happen to be nerdy and like to know this kind of stuff, what is the best software you use for editing?
Apple gives you something called iMovie, I have been using, and I didn't even realize how much stuff was in there. I had a problem with the shot, and Brent Huff, who plays Cobalt in my series, who's a wonderful actor and filmmaker in his own right, he said, well, just flip it. I said, what? Because I was going to do a reshoot because I was looking the wrong way. Mm. You know, in film grammar, that's the ultimate no-no, is that your eye lines don't match.
Right.
And he said, well, just flip it. I said, how do I do that? And he went and he showed me within iMovie this thing, which if I'm looking left in what I shot, there's a way to flip it so I'm looking right.
It's amazing because, you know, there were, anything I had to do that has to do with visuals or what have you, I go to my son. You know, he's 18, and he knows how to do all this crap. And I, you know, when I had all to do to when I was doing music and stuff, I had all to do to connect with entirely and connect with digital. I was still doing some analog and some visual. But these kids just, you know, get right into it. And you're right. I feel like a total idiot, and I am, in terms of how to do certain things. And I've been with this. It just moves so fast. You know, I've been here since the beginning of this crap.
The other thing is, when Mr. Cloves first enters Gordon Halsey's house, and I was doing over-the-shoulder shots of them, and what I didn't notice was I was shooting Colin over Kenny's shoulder, but there was a mirror immediately on the left of the screen, and I didn't notice there was eyes. Oh, wow. So I've got them both in the same shot.
But
until about the 11th time that I was going through the film, and I said, yeah, and in that mirror behind Kenny, there's a blank holding an iPad. And I said, oh, shit, I'm in the shot. So I went back into the master shot, which means both of them are on camera.
Right.
And said, but here's the problem grammatically. I'm cutting into a close-up of Kenny, and then I'm cutting back to a master shot because I don't have the close-up of Colin anymore. And then I remembered something else that Brent Huff told me, which is you can crop the shot.
Amazing.
Just crop a still picture.
Amazing.
I went in and I was able to push I was able to crop myself out of that mirror. And so I was able to use a shot that I loved still.
Did you tell Eureka? I like calling her Eureka. I like that. I like calling her Eureka. Did you tell her
to take a hatchet to you? I think she'll give you permission on this one occasion.
Did you tell her? Because I know she's listening, but I feel like I'm not talking to her.
It's really cool to sit there and participate in the editing, to see all these little tricks and stuff. And then also the endless decision-making process to which shot do you take. And, you know, we've been lucky, so we've had so many good ones. It's been really tough sometimes to.
You probably learned a lot about cropping him out.
Yeah, yeah, she's trying to find out how to do that.
In everyday life.
But I couldn't do the work I'm doing now without Ulrika's eye, because she has a phenomenal eye. She goes, no, do the, take this one, do that, you know, and it's great, because there's a point with this where it's just, I need some distance.
Oh, God, I can imagine that. You, how do you do this in terms of takes? You just go back and you take that particular section, digital section, and move it somewhere? Is that what the iMovie does? I mean, you know, you do like take two, take three, if something goes wrong, or you need two takes, so right?
My actors, first of all, this was different because we only had the one day with the two of them together. And actually, we had planned to do it in 2 days. But these guys, we started around 2 o'clock in the afternoon and we quit around 11. And Kenny's stuff was all done. And then I did the stuff with Colin wandering through the town. I did that the next day, which was Sunday. Mm-hmm. And then Monday we did a couple of pickups. So it was about 3 days. But when we do Atwill, I promise the actors that they won't be there for more than an hour and a half.
Right.
And very rare exception, they're not. And they love doing it because if I get it on that one take, unless there's some kind of flub, I just, good, we're moving on. And they can't believe it because they're so worn down by commercial television and movies where, you know, you're waiting an hour between takes and setups and this and that.
I know.
And with the iPad, we just use the available light. And it's amazing.
So you're answering the question by saying there aren't a lot of takes, so there's not a lot of juggling around of pieces when you have to put the master.
No. And frankly, with some of these people, if I do more than one take, I agonize over what take to use because they always give me something different.
Oh, now you're just massaging egos. Come on, everybody. You know, you're the director.
I promise you. I mean,
you're the director. I know they're great, but you're the director.
They just give you a different reading every time, and it's hilarious.
I know. It is tough. I would imagine it's tough because it's all, like I said, these are all people who know what they're doing.
But here, just because Colin is, you're going to go to him shortly, but I just want you to know, somebody asked me in all innocence, when I was up in Canada and I was showing a few close friends the work in progress, and they asked me, did these two guys know each other? And I went, what are you kidding? You know, they were the National Theatre School together in 1962, but you can't get actors to work like that who are strangers. And I'd say I compare them to great jazz musicians where you just sit them down, you give them the charts and they just do it. They just break up. I mean, that scene, and we're not giving anything away, but when Kenny falls apart and Colin just wraps his arm around him, you can't get that with strangers.
Okay. I mean, maybe if you're the good actors, I don't know, but it is good chemistry. But here's what I found. Here's what I loved about this. And I don't know if they probably, you said they were together at what theater or where? Where
were they? The theater school in Montreal, Canada.
Okay. But I happen to know that in 1969, Colin was Aramis and Kenneth was D'Artagnan. In that TV3 Musketeers. I know two Musketeers.
You do indeed. And that was also when Colin, the second last day of shooting, when Colin had to, as Aramis exits from some lady's bedroom because the husband was coming and there was no net or something out there. And he ended up with a broken leg and almost a broken neck.
Wow.
And the nurse at the hospital became his future wife and the lady who posthumously, was our art director.
The story,
it's a love story.
I love how that stuff comes together. Charles Dennis is telling you all this stuff, and those of you who listen a lot know, because Charles has been on a lot and always brings the most wonderful people, cooks, actors who are great cooks, and we get to sit here and just, I starved. I couldn't eat enough after that episode because I was watching you.
You could see the food.
Oh, gosh,
I know. This is a whole other enterprise that we're involved in with him.
Aramis awaits. I just want to mention one thing because I don't know if Kenneth is coming here, but you know, the minute I saw him, I also knew Colin. But I mean, I saw these guys, and having seen, you know, way too much of films, TV, whatever, I knew them immediately. And I'm just trying to place them here and there. But Kenneth, I immediately went. He's the son of a. He played that son of a bitch vice president, even though he had the long hair, in the day after tomorrow.
He got upgraded. because they fired Perry King, who was the president. They killed him off screen and because they didn't like what he was doing, and Kenny got upgraded.
It was great because he had that Chaney type, you know, that real Chaney attitude.
The reason they cast him was they thought he looked like Chaney.
Yeah, okay, that worked.
But the two Twin Peaks, you know, I mean, he's like a cult hero from that second season where he played Kyle MacLachlan's ex-partner with all the disguises and stuff. He was amazing.
I'm sure. I know it was very popular. Not with me, but it was very popular. Let's get Colin now. What do you say?
Colin Fox,
add him.
Laura.
Add two. Here it is. Add people to this call. Indeed. Let's get him. I have him here now. Let's see. I got to go to Colin Fox Elora. Come on. Come on, Colin Fox Elora. Where are you? Here. And
he
to call Colin.
Today.
I see him. This is going to work.
And I see me now.
I see you and I see Colin. Can you hear us? He's frozen.
Hello. There he is. There he is. Hi.
It is a pleasure and a professional honor to meet you, Mr.
Thank you,
Fox.
Frank.
Mr. Fox.
Following you.
What?
There you go. I just want, Colin and Ulrika have never actually spoken or met.
Oh, well, you're not going to, okay, well, you can do that because Ulrika is right there. Oh.
Ulrika, because she's going to leave us shortly, so let at least, Colin, here's Ulrika.
Hi, Colin, how are you? Nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you too, Ulrika. That's great. I'm nice to hear your voice.
Well, you too. How are you tonight?
I'm fine, actually. I've just had a glass of wine, and I'm mellowed out.
No, very good.
No soup tonight, huh?
No soup.
I was gifted with the pass to see shortly to go, and I was just telling Charles that when I saw you guys, I immediately went, I know these guys. Because I had to go back to the database and place you in, and I knew I know you guys, I've seen you like many times and so there I recognized you but it was wonderful and we're talking about what a wonderful performance from both of you that's chemistry. And I was just telling Charles that I found out. And I don't do much research on this show about anything, and that's why I don't want people to send in books, because I don't got time to read everybody's books and sell them. I had enough time with my own. But I did find out that you and Kenneth, who we don't know if we're going to get Kenneth because he's driving in New York somewhere, were in that 1969. You were two of the Musketeers.
That's right. We were.
When was the last time somebody brought that up?
It's amazing. We actually, Ken and I discussed this when we were working with Charlie, in that we worked together face to face in our, you know, exercise classes at the theater school where we were both in the same class. But it was rare that we could actually have a face to face kind of scene in various films, TV things, mm-hmm. Whatever that we have worked in. Usually we're in some other room, or we're playing side by side, but never this kind of intense working together with a fellow actor. And it was a great privilege. I enjoyed it enormously.
How did they decide you were Aramis?
I think largely because they must have had prescience, because I wound up, after moving to New York, playing a whole series of archbishops, priests, pastors.
Perfect, right? Yeah.
You name it. Yeah. I just seem to fall into the religious cloth.
Mm. Oh, and so, and Aramis? Why?
Aramis, he was kind of a religious character. He's kind of a philosopher, but kind of a religious character among the three musketeers, yeah.
Aramis always gets shortchanged in the dramatic versions of Three Musketeers. He really is really the most fascinating of the characters because of his whole ideological, theological, you know, here's this guy who loves women, who's, you know, having affairs all the time, and yet seriously considers the priesthood.
Yes, he does. That's true.
And why is that unusual?
because it's not usually presented in dramatic versions.
After all, they were French, those musketeers. But anyway.
Exactly. And also in No, it's a trilogy of this Three Musketeers 20 years after, and then The Man in the Iron Mask.
Right.
And The Man in the Iron Mask really is Aramis's book, because he's the guy who's doing that whole plot.
That's a good point.
Very good point. And you get the, you get point. Those,
I like that.
You get those great points from Charles Dennis. I was saying before you I got know. Here. All right.
More useless information available to the team.
Sometimes I wonder if any information is actually useless. You know, I mean, I think, Colin, what is it about that particular part, that you embraced on Shortly to Go? I'm talking about Shortly to Go, not Aramis, Aqued Aramis.
Yeah. I think what I liked about it was the character was enigmatic. He was someone that you didn't really quite know, even at the end of the film. There's something about clothes that is slightly not revealed. Mm-hmm. And what I like about that is that there's always something that fascinates me about performances when actors don't reveal all and leave you with things to fill in. And Mr. Cloves is one of those, mm-hmm. and that's why I enjoy playing it.
Charles likened it to the millionaire, Mike Anthony.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's very much like that. He visits, and there's something about the character himself who remains somewhat detached,
yeah.
like the millionaire. He doesn't get involved, but he is there to change people's lives, or in this case...
Change them, yeah. We don't want to give away. Huh? We're trying not
to... Ken Welch.
Ken is here? Is Ken on your thing? I wonder if we could pick up Ken from there and we could all be here. Now we lost.
That'd be great.
Yeah, that would be. Because I couldn't get Ken's address. I had trouble getting yours, but Charles fixed that. And then Kenneth is supposedly driving around somewhere in Manhattan, which in itself is not a... No one else but us... You guys, I'm seeing you guys. You aren't seeing me because my cam's not working, but,
okay.
I'm seeing you and that's okay. You're not being seen by anyone else.
I switch over to Ken Welch, who's got his niece there and God knows what else. Can you get him now?
Well, how would I? I don't have his address.
Ken Welch. That's all I have.
Well, I got a bunch of Ken Welches here and I don't know which one.
Canada or Uxbridge or something.
Let me try it again here while you guys talk among yourselves and talk about a scene or something. Ken Welch. Okay, so I put in Ken Welch. Okay, search Skype for Ken Welch, and here's what comes up. There's 800 of them. Oh my God! Here's one. Here, Canada. One mutual contact. I wonder if that's him because
that's
I have.
That's him.
Well, no, wait a second. Then I have another Kenneth Welch. One mutual contact. Him. Is that him?
I've got on my screen, it says Kenneth Welch on hold. So go for it.
I have to ask this guy to join me. Why don't you ask him to join me? That would be easier.
Tell him to go to Francatolo.
Yeah, because there's 800 Ken Welches and,
Kenny?
They're all over the place, even in the same area. Let's see if we can get Ken Welch to come here and I could just say okay and add him to this conversation. Colin, what are you drinking?
I'm having a white wine. It's a nice Riesling.
Oh, white wine. White.
Yeah.
Do you think you could tell someone whether they like white or red? What do you think that says about someone?
I don't know. I think largely people who enjoy red, I think, enjoy a nice sensual experience with the wine. It just depends on the temperature. For me, I think when it's a warm night, as it is here in Canada, I'd like a white wine.
Wow, I don't know what it is about white wine that doesn't do it for me.
It doesn't, huh?
But you know what? If you're blind, do you know? Can you tell? Well, people can tell wines. I know people have incredible tastes. That's a white wine, right?
I think there is a distinction though with the white wines, and I think largely because they go with a warm day, and you find out a nice chilled wine feels kind of good.
Do you like playing bad guys better than good guys or good guys better than bad guys?
I like playing bad guys better. I really enjoy them. There's always something that you can add to your experience as an actor in sort of digging into that part of yourself that would love to be really that evil.
I hear that a lot about from actors who aren't known, and then for playing bad guys, and suddenly have to play a bad guy, and how they embrace that. Does that just press something inside of you that makes you like, yeah, I really want to act like a bad, really want to act and do horrible stuff that I wouldn't do anywhere else, which of course would be acting because you don't do it anyway, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's just exploring something in yourself that you would probably not do. It's just something in myself that I would say, oh, yeah, I don't think I could do that in real life. But the lovely thing about playing a bad guy is it liberates you to explore some other elements in yourself. And I don't think there's anything wrong with that, because all of us have a dark side. Mm-hmm. And I think it's useful to explore that and get it out, because let's face it, why harbor it? Use it.
Yeah, that's a good point, because every character has to give depth to every character. You have to have a range of emotions and attitudes and characteristics, right? Is that that's what you're saying?
Yes, that's exactly right.
Who's the horrible? Okay, who is the most horrible? What's the most horrible role you have? I don't mean in that you didn't like most horrible character you ever played.
It's funny. It's funny you should mention that. It was actually in a kids' show called Goosebumps. And it was one of the most popular Goosebumps ever out. It was called The Haunted Mask. And The Haunted Mask has kids sitting in front of the TV, absolutely terrified of this character, who is the one who is, he runs a shop. It looks like a shop, like a magic shop, you know, with all sorts of costumes and things. But he has a back room, and in that back room are these sinister masks. Mm. And anyone who tries it on can't get it off. And that's the terrifying thing about the show, and also because my character is kind of really seedy and awful. I enjoyed it.
I like the way you said it.
Where did you do that?
Goosebumps.
I did that back in the 90s, around 1995.
Hey, I just had Kenneth, and he left. What happened?
I don't know. Get him back. But then you should have a link, right? To just... Try him again.
Ah, got it. Sent you a link. Here we go. Accept. I'm accepting him. Kenneth Walsh is online. Let's see if I can tell him to sit tight. I'm going to add him to the Charles Dennis crew here. Where's Charles Dennis? I'm sorry, Colin. I didn't mean to interrupt you.
No, that's
add
fine.
To group call. Here he comes. Add to group call. Here comes Mr. Kenneth Walsh.
There's no line in here. Good for shit.
Is that him?
There we go.
All over America.
Is that you, Mr. Walsh? Welsh. Oh, God.
Carry on, Colin. You're doing well.
Well, thank you. You could hear me. Oh, I see. Okay.
You look great, man. The lighting is wonderful. You look dead.
I look dead. I just caught a cold.
I'm supposed to be dead, man.
I wanted to know what everybody drinks. What are you drinking, Dan?
Stop talking.
What are you
drinking? All right, let's have some order here, boys. Okay, we need a director. I'm going to handle this. How are you, Kenneth? It's a pleasure, a professional pleasure, and an honor to meet you.
Thank you.
At all, and because I want to say something that I didn't say before, and that is that you, if I was to list, and no one cares, the top 20 movies that I love. One of them is a movie you were in, and it's not the one I mentioned before. You were in the Martin Scorsese's The Aviator.
That's right. I had that one scene at the dinner table. It was a lot of fun, man. It was really great.
That is among the top 10 movies that I could watch over and over.
Thank you. Do you know? I invented a line in that scene.
Oh yeah, tell us.
Well, when Leonardo arrived at the premises, he got out of his car, and the dog went down and jumped up on him. Mm-hmm. And I said, don't worry, he's had his lunch.
Yes! Yes! Yes!
That was my line.
Right!
I said, yeah, let's keep that in. That's a great line.
Yes, yes.
And a lot of people don't get it, but I get it, you know.
And it's perfectly in character with that bunch, that's for sure.
Well, I think so.
That was great. So, yes, yeah, so I can now add that to all the people I know or have met, and I'd say, like, hey, that's old Kenny there. next time I watch
it. Can you see me? I mean, I've
no,
got
I can't.
Phone here. Can you see me?
No, I can't see you. Now
I can't see you.
All I can why see not? Now, I don't know why.
What do I have to do to make you see me?
Is there a camera icon there?
The press icon.
There's Colin.
Yeah.
I'm going to
clip something. My niece Janie is doing something. Now we've lost you. No, there you are.
No one can see me, but everybody, as long as we can hear everybody, because it's just radio.
As long as we can see Colin, because he looks so cadaverous. I love it.
Yeah, that's right. I'm in my cadaverous lighting. Thank you so much.
It's always been my favorite of you, Colin, you know.
I know.
For the last 75 years, how long ever we've known each other.
That's right. Exactly. And I look the same as I did 75 years ago.
Well, you're a very handsome man, even in this lighting.
Even with this lighting. You like that? I like that.
I'm glad you can't see me because I'm drinking a little whiskey here and you're not supposed to see that.
Why?
Oh, that's all right. This is internet.
Yes. No, this is a broadcasting and nobody's seeing you. We're all hearing you. This is radio.
What the fuck? What's going on? Why can't we get on?
What? You're there, aren't you?
Visually?
Yeah, why can't you see me?
No, because he doesn't do the show visually. It's like radio.
Yeah, I know that, but what he's saying...
No.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, you can take your clothes off, Ken. Nobody can see you.
Oh, fuck. Okay, that's fine.
I just wish we could share that whiskey. That's all.
Yeah.
I mean, I can make the sound of someone drinking whiskey. How about that?
I hope so. You've been acting long enough.
Drinking long enough. Delicious, man.
You're here on this group here.
Jameson's. I got at the duty free this afternoon.
Oh, you came over the border.
Oh yeah. Uh-huh. We've been on a road trip for 4 days.
Oh, no kidding. I didn't know that.
Yep.
Great.
What road?
Well, it was a road to Kingston, and then it was a road to somewhere in New Jersey.
Oh, okay.
I was talking about New Jersey earlier.
No, I don't want to give any secrets away, but I was there. That's where we were.
Okay.
Well, you were Frank's in Pennsylvania.
Nice. That's where my accountants are.
Oh, you really? Is that them? I think I know them.
In Conshohocken. Do you know where Conshohocken is?
Yes, I do, but I never want to go there. I don't.
No, I wouldn't.
Nowhere
either.
Near that place.
I just send the money, man. I just send the money.
There's a plethora of talent on this show here right now, and we got another 45 minutes. So this is moving on as well as it could be. Charles Dennis has brought along with him the very talented Colin Fox, and Mr. Kenneth Welsh. I'm sorry about that, Walsh. I don't know what it is. I must have known.
Nice correction.
I must have known someone named Walsh. I don't know why I kept seeing Walsh when it was Walsh.
Well, it's practically the same name, you know, because it's all. You know, part of the same Irish heritage, but Welsh is definitely a separate name.
Now, aside from the aviator, I mentioned to Charles before you guys came on, I said the minute I saw you on Shortly to Go, regardless of the fact that you were your hair is longer, what have you, I said, hey, that's the son of a bitch vice president in the Emmerich movie.
Day after tomorrow, yeah.
And I was right because I told you.
Hey, Frank, what? Hold on.
What?
I started off as a son of a bitch, and then I became, you know, a really nice guy when the president died in a snowstorm.
Yeah. Okay.
If you recall.
I do, but, you know, it's like.
I mean, the director called me up one night in my hotel room. He said, can you stay a few extra days? I said, yeah, why? Because we are killing off the president. He's going to die in a snowstorm. Is this all right with you? I said, yeah.
Is that how Emmerich talks?
Exactly like that.
He said German.
I did an entire...
Absolutely. He's very German, and it's very great, because then I made more money, and I got amazing residuals thanks to my friend Charles.
Oh, I'm all for that. I did an entire show on Emmerich. On Emmerich's format, because every one of his movies, no matter where it takes place or what it's about, has the same format, a character format.
Yeah.
You know, every one. You just can't get away. But I didn't know he was, so if you're watching Godzilla, it's the same thing. The same situation's going on as in The Patriot and in wherever else. So I didn't see that Shakespeare picture he made. Didn't he make a movie about Shakespeare and write his stuff? Which one was that?
No. Wait a minute. Charlie would know.
Who knows that?
Charlie.
Oh, is that movie about who wrote all the plays?
Yeah, he made a movie of
Richard played the Queen. What the hell was that?
It's a real bomb. It bombed. I don't know if it's good.
Of course it did. Because it's all bullshit.
Well, what? You know, not like The Day After Tomorrow, right?
You know, Shakespeare wrote the
place. Not like Godzilla. I know.
Wrote the place. Yeah.
Have you guys done Shakespeare? I don't see any of that on your credits.
Are
on
you
the...
kidding?
Yeah, of course I'm kidding. Of course I'm joking. But I know you have. You must.
An IMDb, Ken.
I played Hamlet when I was 26.
But yes, there is a film.
I wouldn't have known that.
Play with Colin Fox playing Mr. M and Kenny playing Macduff.
Where?
That's right.
Why don't you fucking say it? It's Macbeth, man.
Macbeth.
I think
I was about the same age Kenny, when I played Macbeth.
You tell him how you almost killed me.
This was a set. We were doing this, the Heath, you know, when Burnham Wood comes to Dunsinane, and this is the final battle between Macduff, which Kenny played, and Macbeth, which I played.
Mm-hmm.
And we were, they had these piles of turf put up on sort of a hill. The problem was they were slippery. And so I was supposed to take this swipe with a huge double, you know, you have to hold onto a broadsword with two hands. It's enormous. And I took this swipe supposedly to go over his head. I slipped at that very moment and nearly cut his throat.
Oh,
yeah. That was my first encounter with death, and I got away with it.
Yeah, he got away with it because he did a beautiful. Your reflexes were incredibly fast because you simply
backed away so quickly. My head would be lying on the ground and not.
Yeah, otherwise it'd be lying on the ground.
Yeah,
and we would have had the end of the career of Kenneth Welsh.
Well, that would have ruined this show. Sad. That sure would have ruined this show, you know.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It was terrible.
Yeah,
not that I wanted to make
thing,
it about
that
me.
That thing is on is forever on tape somewhere.
Wow.
I have it, by the way, Colin. I have it
you
on VHS.
You have it.
I fucking
okay,
have it.
Good.
Now, I also want to mention that not only did you play Kenneth, you played a Cheney-like vice president, but you also played Dr. Watson in a TV version of Hound of the Baskervilles. Who was your Sherlock Holmes in that?
Well, that was Matt Frewer.
I'm sorry. I didn't know. That's why I asked.
Matt Frewer.
Yeah.
Who was that head? Mr. The guy who was just a head.
The guy who was just a head.
Yeah, he was called Max
Headroom.
Max Headroom.
Oh, Max Headroom.
Max Frewer played Max Headroom.
Yeah.
And we had so much fun. The director called us in to, he stopped the crew, sent them away, called us in and said, if you boys don't stop behaving like this, we're going to have to stop shooting. They're behaving like four-year-olds. Which was so much fun for us because we had a great time with those. We did four of them.
How did you portray Watson? Watson's one of the most is such a variety of performances, characterizations of Dr. Watson. From Jude Law to Nigel Bruce to even Robert Duvall. How did you play Watson?
Well, I played him as an equal to Holmes with a sense of humor. I always thought that Watson was very funny, very sly, you know, so I always tried to slip something in that was kind of humorous.
Kids who grew up reading Sherlock Holmes don't realize that Watson was the guy who wrote the stories, and he wasn't like Nigel Bruce. He wasn't this, you know, they weren't like a comedy team, even though I loved Basil Rathbone. But,
well, no,
yeah.
We had so much fun, though, me and Matt. It was terribly fun. You know, it's awful.
And another piece of a terrific...
They should have fired us.
who was it who said, when they pay me for this? You also played, and this sounds like good casting too. You played Harry Truman. Is it like to play vice president?
I still have the shoes.
Ah.
You still have the nose.
I still have the shoes of Truman. Yeah.
Yeah, well, you should have kept the nose. That was a great nose.
It was my nose, actually, Colin.
Really?
Oh,
Colin,
come on.
Colin
is build it up.
No, it was mine. It was
your nose?
No, it actually
was. Your doctor was different.
I put a little putty on there.
The night nose.
You know, it was fine.
It was the Harry Truman nose.
No, Truman was great. I loved Truman. I read all about him. I thought he was a really great man.
Yeah, I think he was,
too. He came out of nowhere. He was like a nobody.
Right.
You know, and then Roosevelt died, and they said, who's this Truman guy? All of a sudden, he was president, and he was placed in this position of having to drop a bomb that was already arranged by the generals around him, you know. So he was kind of an amazing guy, and then he got reelected by that amazing, you know, I remember the headline, you know, from 1948, when he said, Dewey wins.
Yes.
And in fact, he didn't, you know, and Truman introduced the actually first legislation that had to do with environmental protection.
And he happened to be one of the few presidents who played the piano.
Absolutely right.
Yes, he did. That's right.
This is
Missouri. Yeah, in the back room, in that house at Independence, he was playing the piano.
This is Cotolo Chronicles. We're with Colin Fox and Kenneth Welsh.
Welsh. Thank you, Frank. Thank you.
Welsh, we love your grapes. And Mr.
Me too, man.
Mr. Charles Dennis. Both of these men appear in the, well, you can't see it yet, but in the soon-to-be Academy Award nomination for Shortly to Go. So I saw it.
Your lips. By the way, the Roland Emmerich film about who was the Duke of it, it's called Anonymous.
Yes. That's
well, it should be.
Vanessa Redgrave played, it wasn't her daughter, it was Vanessa Redgrave who played Queen Elizabeth.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Emmerich. Now go back to,
let's talk about our little movie.
I want to ask you what I asked Colin, and then what about this particular short? What about it did you embrace in terms of two character, you know, the character, your character?
First of all, embraced having the opportunity to work with my really good friend Colin Fox.
Oh, he looked alive then.
Man, listen, you know, we hadn't worked together. We graduated from theater school in 1965. We never worked together. Mm-hmm. And it was so much fun re-encountering this wonderful man, this great actor. And we had, you know, such a great time. Almost, you know, and Charlie, you know, bringing us together with his iPad. I mean, it was an incredible kind of experience because Charlie would like take pictures standing on a ladder, lying on a table, moving around a room, and never ever wavering the camera in any way, never shaking it. And it, you know, he'd take one shot, two shots, and we'd do one take, two takes, and we'd say that's enough, you know.
Yeah.
And remember the shot at my table when I had to get a close up and I didn't know how to do it.
See the great thing is me and Colin just embraced each other through the whole experience.
What?
That was a really great thing, Ken, because there are a lot of things that when actors don't know each other, they have to go through a process of being able to work together. And we didn't have that. We didn't need it.
No.
Because there were things that we just immediately understood from each other.
Completely. After, you know, knowing each other for, what, I suppose, 60 years, something like that, 55.
Almost 60. I think.
Could you have
when you
go ahead? I'm sorry.
When you have that, it automatically just kind of falls into place because you love each other.
That's right. Exactly right.
Charles, come in here for a second, and they'll give their opinions here too. What about each of them made you give them those roles? You know, lots of times people can play. You guys could either have played, you know, the individual roles. You could have changed roles and, you know, gotten away with it, too. But what about them and you guys, too, playing the specific roles you did in a two-person piece? Did I make that clear, or am I confusing you all?
It's all right. I understand.
Well, that's wrong. Good.
Again, it's music. It's knowing, you know, if I look at both my friends as instruments, I know what notes they can hit. And so.
Colin, where are you going?
I'll be right back.
Okay.
It's okay. I just have to shut the phone off.
How did you know he was leaving? Could you see him?
You can see him.
I can't see anyone anymore.
I can see his every move.
Okay, I can't see anyone anymore.
Go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
Go ahead, Charles.
All right.
it's just knowing what notes, you know, so if one guy is a trumpet and one guy's a bass fiddle or whatever, I know what notes they hit. And so I write for them.
Did you guys immediately agree? Or did you go, oh, come on, I could be that. I should be Cloves. Oh, I mean,
never. Never.
No, that never occurred to either of us, I don't think.
No. I totally saw that Colin was Cloves, and I was the guy who wanted to die.
What about what about that part? Did you bring what piece of yourself did you bring to that particular part? Because go ahead, just answer that.
Well, my depression, really.
Oh, so you've suffered depression.
Well, it's very sad in my life. Yes.
Really? Okay. Well, I don't. You know, maybe clinically.
I understand that about the guy. Uh-huh. You know that. He suffers from arthritis. He has several things going for him. He lives alone. His wife has left him.
Right.
He's very lonely. He sees no more reason for living. And so I think this happens with a lot of people. And he just thought, why not do it kind of like this kind of interesting, easy way? You know, you find somebody online who has this kind of interesting offer to make. You know, they'll come and put you to sleep, whatever. I don't think my character actually knew what was going to happen. But
but he wanted, above all, I think he wanted to control the situation because he was a controlling personality, wasn't he?
Well, I guess so, but very vulnerable, too.
Yeah, very vulnerable.
At this point in his life, probably before this point, he was very controlling in his life as an architect and so on. But now... I mean, now that he was alone, he was like soft and vulnerable and just thought, you know, he couldn't live alone anymore, couldn't live by himself, couldn't live at all. Mm-hmm. So, you know, he decided that was enough. I mean, I questioned Charlie about the reason for it. Why does this guy want to do it? And so I had to instinctively, as an actor, kind of find, as we went, you know, through the shooting of it, what is really going on? Why is he doing this? And it came to me in a kind of, I don't know, intuitive way. It wasn't like he said, oh, I have cancer, or I have this, or I have that, or I have brain tumors, or I have, like, dementia. Mm-hmm. It was just that he was, kind of losing interest in life.
Charles, before we know he's going to make soup, you ask if he has any onions, and what was the other ingredient?
Carrots.
Okay, carrots. Yeah, the onions and carrots. And I go, where is he going with this thing here? Would that soup not have been was that just a little, just to get you into cooking? Why would onions and carrots be your choice there?
Because it's funny. It's funny.
Plus,
let me tell you something. Charlie is nothing if not a funny writer. Everything I've done with Charlie throughout the years has been humorous, ironic, funny, subtle. And that's part of it. The carrots and onions is just like a funny reference. You know, hey, what's this all
about? I never
thought
it was funny. I don't understand what I mean, he was making this stew. What I failed to do was do a close-up of the jar of special herbs. But
no need, Charlie, no need.
But what are these strange tastes? That is that. I remember
you covered it, man. You covered it.
Yeah.
There was an Agatha Christie book where we discovered that poverty will kill a Turk. I mean, there's
very
people killing people without using chemicals.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Yes.
But Kenny made a huge contribution. I was sitting in the airport on the 5th of July on my way to Canada to shoot this, and I got an email from Ken. Because Kenny, right up in the first day of work, is always, you know, contradictions and everything else. And he said, because originally he was going to call an old girlfriend from high school whom he hadn't seen. And Kenny said, that doesn't work for me. Why can't it be like an ex-wife or a daughter? And suddenly that whole thing opened up about Sandy being his ex-wife. And then I got the thing about the missing earrings. And that suddenly it became a whole other film, which is so much better than what I had written before, and I have Ken Welsh to thank for that.
Yeah, that's a really good move. That was a good move. Yeah.
Thank you.
It's time to lobby for a credit here. No, I'm joking.
No.
Just joking.
Let me tell you something about Charlie.
Go ahead, tell us more.
He's always open always open to suggestion. He's a great writer. He's always open to suggestion about it because he respects the fact that you know your character probably better than he does.
Yeah.
Well, that's what I was saying. He gets such good actors. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with his writing, but when you get great actors, that's their job to bring, you know, to put the flesh on the bones, and they do it. But a lot of times they don't do it. They just, you know, they just phone it in, and you don't get the depth.
He will change the bones for you to work with.
Yes, he will. Yeah. And one thing about Charlie is the fact that he's very open to whatever opinions we have, because we would stop after a take. He says, okay, come over here, have a look at this. And he'd replay it on his iPad right away. Mm-hmm. We could see the scene.
Yes.
And we could say, oh, okay, well, maybe there should be a close-up here on so-and-so or whatever. And he said, yeah, you're right. Let's try that. So, I mean, because he knows how to edit and edits beautifully, I think the fact that we have the input like that and his openness to us for suggestions means that we're working really as a tandem. There's not one authority figure. We're all in the mix.
And now that he's learned how to crop himself out, it's
Well, he cropped himself out.
That one dropped like a lead balloon.
Charlie is the 90s.
I cropped myself out of the mirror shot, Ken. When you were in the mirror and you could see me behind you with the iPad,
I was in
post. I cropped myself out of the mirror. That was fantastic. I didn't lose Colin's close-up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was very good.
No. But the thing about these two men that I want to say, mm-hmm. I may read good text, but they write subtext.
Yeah, here's another moment here.
Go.
Okay. It comes in the script where Gordon, you know, he talks on the telephone.
That's Ken's
character. Charlie writes simply, he has a breakdown.
Mm-hmm.
So when we came to that point, you know, Charlie said, okay, that's fine. And I said, well, wait a minute, where shall I do this? Gordon has a breakdown. Where shall he have it? And Charlie said, why don't you just grab a hold of Mr. Cloves and, you know, go there. And I did. I threw my arms around Colin. I just started to cry. I wept and wept and wept. And it was like that. The whole, you know, that kind of moment of improvisation is the thing that Charlie encourages so well.
Yeah, he does.
Well, I don't even know if you just did it. God bless you, because... No.
You were there. You said, man, okay, do this. Grab Mr. Cloves and do it. And that's what an actor needs. You know, we need a small foothold on where, you know, where we're going next. And you did that.
The one I do remember that works out so brilliantly is when Colin found the sheet music for Something to Remember You By. And he started to sing it. And then Ken, as Ken, said, no, that's not the way it goes.
Yes.
And anyway, no. You got to use that now. You've got to correct them on camera.
And by the way, I was wrong.
Well, no, you were wrong.
That's not the way the song goes.
Well, it was an interpretation.
The character Gordon thought, yes, that's the way the song goes.
And that's why when I came back to L.A. and shot Patty McCormick, I gave her this new speech about he's never wrong, you know, and we saw that already with the song.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And that, of course, that was
a very important element for Halsey. Very important.
It's always great. And I know that people who are studying, as I told Charles before, people love to hear this stuff. People who are studying how films are made and how creative people work together, that this stuff emerges in the process of creating the actual piece. Whereas it's not this very academic process of, look, here's a stick to the script, read that, you know, and shut up or make things and move on. People like and enjoy the fact that, art is a living thing. And as you create it, it lives and you make it live. Of course, sometimes you don't. I mean, there's plenty of productions that don't, but, great, great actors and directors and people who work together know how to bounce off each other, I guess, just to take from one another to make the entire piece, and the piece becomes the objective, not who's doing what.
Completely.
Yeah, I was going to say that the amazing thing is that we all have lines. We look at the script and we have lines to learn. We have to learn those lines in order to get, you know, a proper cue for our fellow actor. But I've never had it so easy in terms of lines just coming to me from the two things. One is Charlie's writing, which is wonderful, but also it's the fact that I'm playing opposite an actor who I know is already receiving about a 400 tons of subtext while I'm working with him. Uh-huh. And it makes the lines come out so easily because there's a rightness to having that relationship between us as actors and us as the two characters, if that makes any sense.
It does. Charles?
And it also helped that we did the whole thing in sequence from beginning to end.
Oh, that's yes.
Except for the shooting that took place, you know, after I left. And Charlie shot some night scenes and so forth. But the main bulk of it, we shot in sequence.
Yes, I really like that.
Big difference because
it's really the moment, only way for me to work.
I was going to ask that. I didn't ask that. I was going to ask that, Charles, before when I was talking about you editing this. If it was done, you know, in sequence, but you don't do your stuff any other way, right?
Well,
I mean, when you need to, of
this wonderful house of Mr. Fox's, so that I said, okay, we'll start, and we'll just. I did not think we would do this in one day. We had planned to do this in 2 days. But these guys were great. We started at 2:00 PM. We took a dinner break and we did. And I said, we cannot resume until it's dark outside because it just doesn't work if it's not dark outside. Not just for the fact that there are windows and we can see it's dark out there, but just the feel of the nighttime.
Sure. Sure.
Yeah. But you know, another thing is, let me bring this into it.
Go.
Usually when you're making a film, you've got a crew around. You've got, I don't know, 15 to 35 people. Mm. Rarely do you get the chance to have a dear friend who is an excellent, you know, filmmaker with an iPad and your great old buddy Colin Fox, just the three of us, nobody else.
Nobody else.
Just making this film from moment to moment with no interference. In this beautiful house and outside in the Aurora Gorge. And it was just amazing that way. Nobody interfering and saying, okay, now it's time for lunch. You know, bring on the snacks and where's your trailer?
I know. All you had was soup.
I had soup at least. Yeah. That was my lunch.
Onions and carrots and whatever and lentils or whatever that you put into that thing. Was that actually edible?
Well, it was poison, but it was edible.
Well, yeah. I mean, was it a prop or did you have to...
No, Frank, it was very edible.
I don't know.
It was edible, but I didn't get to eat that much of it because, you know, we made the shot. We moved on, and I said to Charlie, look, empty the dish because it's got to be empty. You know, we can't have anything in it. Because I say, is there any more? You know, ask for more, and there's nothing in the bowl. Mm-hmm. So, but I did enjoy the soup as much as I had it because Colin spent so much time in that kitchen preparing soup. You know, it was just, you know, he's such a great cook. I couldn't help myself. I ate it all.
I think you came up with a real great subtitle here, Charles. So if you want to release this in another place, you know, they change titles, things like. I think the subtitle for this is "Grab Mr. Cloves." I like that. We keep talking about that scene.
Why did I call them cloves? And people said, "You know, the devil has cloven them." I think it had to do with the cooking. It just seemed like a good name, the cloves.
Yeah.
What
are you not supposed to eat when in the? Is it the clove? What are you not supposed to eat in those big stews? They say, "Don't eat the." Cloves?
Well, bay leaves.
I don't think so. No.
Which one is
it? I have the bay leaves.
Is it the bay leaves, Colin?
Yes, bay leaves. Yeah.
Don't eat the bay leaves. I love that, how you can put the stuff into the food. But you, well, that's a whole other story. We'll get...
By the way, I've been meaning to tell you, Colin, last week I found a clay oven at the Salvation Army, so I need to get those recipes from you.
Oh, Ian, okay.
He's a brilliant chef, Frank.
Another one?
Yeah.
Cooking.
I don't do badly, you
Cooking's
know?
Big with actors, isn't it?
Not with me.
Oh, no. You are also exceptional. You've made some extraordinary. He gets it all from his garden. You're the most amazing pastas, Ken.
I used to. I take stuff from my garden. I throw something on the barbecue. I hope for the best.
Oh, well, this is, I mean, he's very modest. I'm sure it's great.
Let me ask Ken what I asked Colin before Ken got here and before I was able to say all that, all those names correctly in the same sentence. And that is, do you enjoy playing a wonderful, great characters or terrible, horrible people? What do you like better as an actor?
Frank, I play them all, man. I've done comedy all my life.
Well, what do you like better? What do you like? You know, play the
comedy. I like playing comedy.
And a good person in a comedy or a bad person?
Comedy and funny. A good person, yes.
Okay, he wants comedy and a good person.
I did The Odd Couple about 1,000 years ago. Funniest play I was ever been in.
You know, oh, that's wonderful. Amazing.
Who did you play?
Oscar.
Of course.
See? One of the youngest Oscars ever in the professional theater.
You were 26. I was 26 years old, yeah.
Yeah, you're a wonderful, perfect Oscar.
That is.
Actually, you and Colin should do it again.
I was, because partly I love to fart, and farting to me is very funny. And Oscar, Oscar farts a lot,
He does. That's Oscar.
So I like, Frank, doing comedy. That's it. I've done lots of comedy. In New York, I did a lot of comedy. In The Real Thing, in Social Security.
Social Security, which he stole from me. This is latency.
Who? What was this? What's this piece of criminal activity going on here?
What have I missed?
But Kenny worked with Mike Nichols a great deal, and he did this play called Social Security with Marlo Thomas and the late Ron Silver.
Mm-hmm.
And
he got, no, darling. Social Security. That's right. I can't even say because I've had too much whiskey.
I know.
Good for you.
Thank God, there's only a few minutes left that people don't
know. Social Security. Social Security. Good. That's very good.
And what, they stole it from? What are you talking about?
No, and Kenny said to me, oh, by the way, I've taken a few little things from you you'll see on stage. And I sat there howling because he had all these gestures of mine that he was very funny.
Yeah, that's right. I stole you. I stole you for that character.
Yeah.
Do you guys, it's a completely different experience, of course, film and stage. But do you have a preference? And if you do, is there one part you always wanted to play? Let's start with you, Colin.
I think the preference of stage is the fact that you don't stop. You just keep going, and you're in the throes of something quite wonderful, or it can be an absolute disaster, but you have to keep going. And the one part I think I would really like to play is Prospero.
Ah, Tempest,
in the
right?
Tempest.
Yeah.
You can have that one, man.
Okay, that's a toughie.
Well, what about it? Okay,
take it.
Okay, thanks.
I understand that our friend Martha Henry is Prospera next year.
No kidding.
Yeah.
She is not.
See, Colin, you've missed it, man.
Ah.
Helen Mirren has paved the way, you see. She did it on film.
You've missed it.
Oh, my God.
What about...
Martha has just preempted you.
What about you, God. Kenneth? Kenneth, what about you?
Me?
I forgot the question,
listen, I'd like to play King Lear if I can make it funny.
Oh, funny, a funny King Lear. I thought King Lear was funny in the first place.
He is funny. Yeah. I'd like to cut out most of the rest of the play. too many characters. Just make it about him.
Well, let's keep the fool there. I'd love to play the fool while you play.
Okay, fine. He's a good tease.
To do that Merchant of Venice that you and I worked on, Kenny was going to play Shylock like Jackie Mason, and it was brilliant.
Okay. Signor Antonio, many a time and oft in the Rialto have you raided me about my monies and my usances. Hey! With a patient shrug. It was fun, yeah.
There's no body, there's no dead body that has turned over in his grave more than Shakespeare, that is for damn sure. We're here at Cotolo Chronicles. I'm chronicling, but the people I'm chronicling about are a
couple of lunatics,
veteran performers, and certainly masters of their craft. Charles Dennis, the director and writer, and sometimes he's there doing some acting chops, and Colin Fox, who together with Kenneth Welsh, those are two
Welsh.
I said Welsh, didn't I? Yeah.
Yes, you did.
Two of the three Musketeers, although D'Artagnan wasn't a Musketeer in that until the end. Do you remember that? Did we talk to you about that, Kenneth? You were both in The Three Musketeers in 1969.
That's right. I was D'Artagnan, yeah.
And yes, you were.
Yeah.
Who wasn't a Musketeer until the end of the story. But where are you going? Why are you leaving the room, Kenneth? No. Okay.
I'm to do something.
I'm taking a leave.
Yeah.
We have.
I'm taking a leave, Frank. I'm taking a leave right now.
Okay, I do that too.
All right.
The first on the internet.
This show has done many firsts.
In the bathroom. Ken.
We've heard that. I can't tell you how many times we've heard that. And here, in the last 7 minutes that we have, Charles. So when we've talked a lot about this film, and we don't know when anybody's going to be able to see this, right?
We don't. Frank, you can break the story when it happens. We're working on it.
Okay. And I will break it because I want everybody to know.
But Charlie, you've got it out there on YouTube or something.
No,
it's on private Vimeo only for people with the password to see it, but it's not available.
Why don't you just send it out there?
Because I don't want to, because I'm trying to get it, you know, into something a little more respectable first, that's all.
Well, give it a chance for a minute and then put it out there.
Well, yeah. You know, he could always give to special people the password, as he did, as I did.
There you go.
In the meantime, are you guys going to pop up in any of these, in a series? Are they going to pop up anywhere in other stuff? Or what are you guys doing?
I haven't had a chance to tell Colin, but I am working on a feature film for them that I will do on the iPad in 2018.
Okay.
If we live that long, we'll do it together. It will be fun.
What are you guys doing?
We'll do it as a hologram if necessary, you know?
Yeah, we'll do holograms, yeah.
Do what they did with Peter Cushing in that Star Wars thing, right?
That's right. Bring him back.
What are you guys doing right now? Not I mean like this moment, of course. Acting wise.
Okay, acting wise.
Yeah, what are you doing?
I just had a call back for a Christmas movie from Hallmark, and I have no idea whether I'm going to get it or not, but mm-hmm. I went to a second audition. It was fun. And guess what? It's a pastor.
Of course.
I find it absurd.
Mr. Fox is directing a stage musical at the present time.
Yes, I am. I'm directing a new musical as well up here.
Whose musical?
It's a musical written by Daniel Bratton, who is a professor of English up here. And he actually interviewed Timothy Findlay, who is a very famous author in Canada, about a funny speech that he made, which was completely made up. And so the musical is made up on this crazy lie that he told. Uh-huh. And it goes from there.
There you go.
We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Kenneth, what are you doing?
Nothing.
I thought there was a comment.
You'll never work again, Frank.
Frank, I'm retired except for Charlie's movie.
Oh, no, you're not. You know, let me tell you something. What?
Hey, Frank.
What?
Listen, I'm 75. I work in my garden. I swim in my pool. I ride my bicycle. I go on road trips. I love it.
I find it amazing
He's in a new movie with Jimmy Caan and Paul Sorvino.
That's an old fucking movie, Charlie. That was like 3 years
just
ago.
It's coming out now. When I was there last month, there were ads on TV for it.
Okay, fine.
All right. I find it amazing that you guys have to audition for anything. I mean, there's so much.
Of course we do. It's a different business now. There's 18 producers for everything you audition for. 18 of them.
Wow.
They all have to sit around, like, over several weeks and go, oh, no, I don't like that guy. Oh, I like him. I don't like him. I like him. I don't like him. And that's the way it goes, man.
Wow, that's sad.
I know it is.
That's really sad.
We don't care anymore because Colin and I basically are retired, except he does these plays.
Yeah, every now and then. And Ken was magnificent. Last Christmas, he did the entire Child's Christmas in Wales by Dylan Thomas from memory before an absolutely rapt audience.
Last live performance of mine you'll ever see.
Wow, you're so certain about it. How could you be so certain
absolutely
about everything?
It's done. I don't need to do that anymore.
It's not need. We're not talking about need. What are we talking about?
It is need.
It's not
need.
The need.
When I was a young actor, I had need. I have no need now.
Okay. All right.
That's a good point. Quite often,
Frank,
feel.
Who wants to go in and rehearse 8 hours a day and perform like 3 hours a night and drive home, blah, blah, blah? Who needs that? Not me.
Mm-hmm.
No. You heard it right here from Kenneth Welsh.
Thank you very much.
It doesn't matter how you pronounce his name.
Offer me a role again.
It doesn't matter how you pronounce his name anymore because you're not going to see him. It doesn't matter. He's a Walsh. He's a Welch. Welch's. Doesn't matter. Ken Wilberson, ladies and gentlemen. Let's hear it for Ken Wilberson. Doesn't matter.
Ken Warshevsky.
Is Fox your real last name, Colin?
Fox is not really my last name because my last name was Smith, so I changed it.
He admits it.
I admit it. I don't care anymore.
The name Colin is getting popular now with the younger generation. You know that?
Yeah, it seems to be. Yeah. And I thought I had something pretty exclusive and interesting, but now it's becoming very mundane.
It's come back. Kenneth has always been mundane.
Yeah, but Colin, you were an instigator. You're an inventor. You were, among the first to do that.
Yes, you're right.
You're a fucking genius.
I had to invent myself.
You're a genius.
I reinvented myself.
You are.
Yeah.
You're a genius, and I love you.
I love you too, Ken.
What?
This interview is forever now. If you go on the Cotolo Chronicles in the future, you just go to this date. It's there for anybody to hear.
And I will have you on again, whether you're retired or not, okay? We want you guys to be back and talk about anything we can. We'll talk about the industry or movies that we like.
I think we will.
This is great.
Talk to Ken about baseball. He can do 24 hours.
No, baseball. We don't really.
Baseball, yes!
Yeah. All right, we can talk about baseball. We can do a lot of things. I want to thank all of you for, thank everybody. Again, Charles, for letting me meet these people and talk with them and exchange and have them back again, I hope. I wish you guys the best. First of all, the best of health. And
thank you.
And I guess the rest.
Yes, we got to make that movie.
Yes.
Make that movie.
While we're still alive,
he's still good. Yes. He's good.
Taking out a huge insurance policy.
There's bound to be more from you guys. I understand that. Thank you very much, and Charles. And we'll be.
If poor Ken died, get money.
You're great, Frank. You are great, man.
Thank you.
Frank's the best.
Coming from you guys, it's quite a compliment, and we will.
It was a wonderful interview. Thank you so much. You were really good.
We will be back.
Amazing.
Again, thank you very much. I love people who love me.
Absolutely.
You know what it's like. I'm an actor. I'm a born actor. Thank you very much.
Come on up for a swim.
I'm going to do that. I am. I promise. I'm gonna
send you a map.
Just don't make me any soup. No soup.
No soup.
Thank you, guys.
No soup.
Okay, Frank, good night.
Good night. We'll talk to you soon. Good night. What a bunch of guys, huh? That is a crew. That was a crew. That was great. That was wonderful. And I hope you all enjoy it. Now, if I could find where I have this thing, we could get here, right? Is that? Thank you. Who is that anyway?
That's Cotolo over there. You know what I mean?
I know what you mean. We're gonna roll it out here now. Coming to that. And mucho thanks, Charles Dennis, Kenneth Welsh, and the wonderful Colin Fox. We're going to have all these guys on again sooner or later. We just get on and talk about all sorts of stuff. Good night, Mrs. Ernstwhile, wherever you may be located. I will see you again as soon as we can, hear you again and see you again. Go buy the books. Go do what you got to do. Juice talk to hear it all. over again. It's yours. It's free. Thank you very much. I'll leave you now. We've said a lot, and I have nothing more to say.